Hey, Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast. Evan is on his little break here, so joined by the one and only Danny Cunningham on today's show. I want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Locker Room is changing the way that we talk about sports. Download the app and join me this week. Well, you're going to listen to this later. So I headed to Locker Room last time with Jordan Zerman, 8:30. We'll be doing those at 8 or 8:30 on Wednesday or Thursday every week. Again, Locker Room, changing the way that we talk about sports. Danny, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Not much, Chris. I'm doing well. How are you?
You know, I'm doing good, buddy. We are diving into the offseason here. We're diving into everything that is happening here in the NBA. And because Evan and I did a mailbag episode ahead of time, we did not talk about the coin flip. So the Cavs had a situation where they lost their coin flip to the Thunder. That gives them the fifth best odds. They could pick as low as ninth now. Basically will not pick fifth based on how the lottery stuff works. Sort of a tricky situation for them. But, like, I honestly, Danny, my take is I don't care that much. I obviously think you'd rather have the better odds, but your odds for top four are the same, and that's sort of the point of this anyway.
Yeah, basically the only thing that changes with the coin flip is the basement, I guess, of where your pick could potentially end up. And like you just mentioned, that's ninth now instead of eighth. All this would have been solved if the Cavs would have just rolled over and lost to the Boston Celtics down the stretch.
I've been trying to be off the stupid website that is twitter.com. Has anyone done like the Kevin Love like cost the Cavs a pick take yet?
I don't think I've seen that take. I think we have to wait for the lottery to actually happen before that take comes out, because we don't know. I mean, the Cavs could draft number one overall and that night is moot.
Yes.
Or they could end up ninth and we are going to roast Kevin Love because of it.
One of the things that someone, I think it might have been Ryan Morton, pointed this out. I think that was right, was that the Cavs like won the coin flip in the year in 2012. And they ended up picking fourth anyway, and then the Pelicans picked first and got Anthony Davis, and that was who the Cavs had the coin flip with. Like, this doesn't, like, ultimately, like, determine the lottery. And I sort of understand, like, being reactionary in the moment. I certainly obviously understand if you're, like, invested in the Cavs getting a top four picking, being able to get Jalen Green, if you get one, you get Cade, but at least getting a Cade, maybe getting a Suggs or whatever, I can get being invested in that, but you're also in a situation like, I just don't know how much this ultimately, like, I feel like this is worth, like, stressing about. Like, it just is what it is. It's luck anyway. You're just going to have to get lucky in less than a month again anyway, and then you can start worrying about it, and I don't know. This seems just like one of those things that, like, the people that I saw getting tied up over knots in it, I think, are a little too, like, ready just to be tied up in knots.
Yeah, I think you would rather save your luck for the actual draft lottery as opposed to a coin flip. That, again, ultimately means very little. Your odds of drafting in the top four are not changed by the fact that the coin came up tails instead of heads or heads instead of tails, however it worked yesterday. So I don't think it's something getting worked up over. I truly don't. If the Cavs are going to get lucky, you would rather be they get lucky and land the number one overall pick instead of them getting lucky and can't pick any lower than eight. Like, it's just not luck that's worth getting worked up over, truly.
Here are the pick odds if people haven't seen them. This is from Tankathon. So 11.5% for number one, 11.4% for number two, 11.2% for number three, 11% for number four, a mere 2% for number five, 18.2% for number six, 25.5%, which is the most likely outcome in over a quarter scenarios there for number seven, 8.6 for number eight, and 0.6 for number nine. I guess if there is like a downside to this is that, like, although I like some of the guys you might be able to get at six, seven, eight, and particularly like seven, I think you could get, if Scottie Barnes is there, I think that's still like a really good outcome, right?
You're a big Scottie Barnes guy.
Yeah, Scottie, I should have taken the Fear the Sword slack that I will like unveil here is like, I think if you were at four and like the top three is Cade, Green, Mobley in some order, like mm-hmm. I'm not like opposed to like taking Barnes. I do just think someone is going to jump. Like someone is going to have like a Patrick Williams rise and it's going to push someone down. And I'm not saying that that is always correct, but it just always happens. Like there's someone that jumps higher and gets picked higher than we're expecting now. That's how this works. It works like this in the NBA draft. It works like this in the NFL draft. It probably works like this in the NHL draft. I can't say I've ever paid a lick of attention to the NHL draft. The MLB draft, I just forget exists, frankly, a lot of the time. But like
everyone does.
Yes. But I just look at this and it's like, okay, I think obviously you'd like to have the top four pick, but I think you at least, I think even if you slide to 7-8, it will be less fun. I think certainly makes your life harder in theory about getting that franchise guy. I think obviously like you want to get Cade in this draft and then like your everything can get moving in a way. But if you're at 6, 7, 8, like there are guys in that range, and you for people that don't know, you do some draft stuff at Complex. Like there are guys that I think are intriguing in that range. So I'm not gonna. I think if you're the Cavs, you shouldn't be bent out of shape over sliding back a little bit.
You shouldn't be bent out of shape, but it does push the timeline back because with the Cavs, I think right now, Chris, I think they've got some pretty solid complementary pieces. Like I think Colin Sexton is a guy that has a place on a team that. Is a winning team.
How much did Brittany pay you to say his name first when you started talking about current Cavs players? Like $50?
She has not paid me. Okay. She did want me to tell you that she says hi and that you're her favorite, but she did not pay me to bring up Colin Sexton.
That's right.
He's got a place on a winning team, but he's not, you know, that floor raiser. He's not that guy that's going to ensure that you're a winning team. And until the Cavs have that guy, the timeline just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back until you're ultimately looking at, okay, who is even left from this era when the Cavs ultimately are winning again? So I do kind of think that while you can still get a good player at 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever, you're not going anywhere as a franchise until you get that guy that's taking you somewhere, and they don't have it yet.
So this is, I guess, my question, and this goes into my broader point that I will bring up every day until someone talks to the media. Like, I just don't really, I feel like this is my bit. This is my brand now. This, and like our Locked On.
You're not alone, Chris.
No, but like, I feel like the way I'm alone is that like, I would like to see someone who like covers the team full time say something. Kind of.
Sure.
That, I think we need like some, like, again, like I have my qualms, but like, I look at this and I do think that, I don't feel like I exactly know like how many of what the timeline is, and that sort of begs the question about this. And I think that sort of puts the Cavs still in a tricky spot. And I think about like I guess I look at this and I wonder how many guys they have that I think are like sure for guys. There are like guys down the roster that I like. I think there's like some intrigue in Lamar Stevens. I think Dean Wade really did some interesting stuff last year. But like how many of these guys are really locked in as like good NBA players? The number's not particularly big. And I think that's where, like, I wonder, like, I think Cade sort of could unlock some stuff in a way that is unique to him in this draft. But I also just, like, wonder how far along the timeline is. I'm a little skeptical of people that are a little higher on this, just because I tend to just think you need to see it a little bit more than we have. And I'm willing to say, like, the last 2 years have been bizarre. There could be some leap that could come. It could be a little unexpected because of how weird the last 2 years have been and affected things, but I just need to see a little more before I'm kind of buying all that stock.
I think the biggest hint that the Cavs have given us about their timeline is the Jared Allen move, mm-hmm. because, you know, he's someone that's extension eligible. He's not going to be cheap moving forward. He's going to be an expensive part of this core, and they're going to extend him. They're going to keep him around because they wouldn't have made the trade for him had they not envisioned him as part of the future. We're going to find out a lot about how they feel about their timeline when it comes to time, whether or not Sexton gets extended this summer, or if they're going to try and roll that over to next summer. Those are going to be the biggest hints. And we don't know because we haven't heard from Kobe in what feels like 5 years at this point. Like it feels like the last time he talked was when they acquired Isaiah Thomas for Kyrie Irving at this point. Like that's how long it feels it's been.
Oh man. Oh, what a press conference that was to be at him. It was Zizic, Jay Crowder and IT with Ty and Kobe.
Yes, I was at their press conference. It was a very bizarre one. The thing I will always remember about it was Jay Crowder telling us he found out he got traded to the Cavs while his mother was on her deathbed.
Yeah, really, really like a mood, an interesting mood setter of that presser. Like, and yes. Obviously he was going through some stuff, but and like none of those guys are on the team. Kobe's the last man standing there, and like Ty would last like one more year.
Yeah, I mean, not much longer, but that's what I remember. And until we hear from Kobe, and even if we hear from Kobe, it's going to be, you know, all cliche, and it's going to give us no hints, but at least we're going to know that he still exists type of thing, which we don't know at this point.
But we're going to head into the break here in a second, but I guess my follow-up to that is just, do you think that him not talking, and I think it's 10 days since the season ended, it's been 133 days on the day people are hearing this since he's talked to the media. I calculated this the other day. I'm not a psycho who's just like calculating this. I'm a little crazy, but do you read anything into that? Because I just don't know. Right. Like, I don't
exactly. It's odd.
It's odd. I just don't know if I'm like. I think the thing about it is, like, I think if Kobe gets fired, I think we sort of know who. I sort of believe that Brock Oller is going to get the job, and we're just going to, like, that's going to be a thing.
So are we waiting for the Knicks to be eliminated?
Yeah, but, like, do you I don't know. That's, like, the thing. It's, like, I just don't know exactly, like, what we're doing here or what the point of, like, the it was three. Ben Oxrod pointed out it was, like, 3 days since the last time that between the end of the season that Kobe talked. And then, like, Kobe this year himself said, like, I'm going to talk to you guys more, and then just, like, never did. So
No, he's not.
It's
frustrating because there needs to be accountability from somebody. And JB essentially was a meat shield all year long.
Yeah, a true, like, mensch to just really handle, like, getting the shellac, like, being the face of the franchise in a lot of ways in a Zoom year.
Yeah, and that's a tough role. Now, granted, it is part of the job to an extent as a head coach, because part of your obligation is you're going to meet with the media every single day. Mm-hmm. You're going to be that voice between the organization and fans. But it also shouldn't always be like that. And unfortunately, it has been. But if and when Kobe ever speaks, or, you know, if a move is made and they hire somebody else and he or she would speak to the media, then I think we find out a little bit more about that timeline. But it's certainly accelerated should they win the draft lottery, to tie back to what we were actually talking about. And if they end up at 6, 7, or 8, the timeline gets pushed back at least one more year, if not two. And then you have questions about, okay, well, if the timeline's looking like, you know, 3 or 4 more years away, Colin Sexton's probably not part of that because he's going to be too expensive and not good enough at that point. Jared Allen might not be part of that because he's going to be too expensive and not good enough to justify paying a center that much money. So this is really the most consequential draft lottery that the Cavs have had. And I know that, you know, the Colin Sexton one, they could have had Luka Doncic had they won, and that the franchise would look much different now. They could have had Zion had they won that one. But I think this lottery is more consequential because they actually have pieces in place now. And in those ones, they didn't. But now it's a different story because of that.
Yeah, I think that's right. We're going to take a break. We're going to pay some bills here. We'll be back after this. Danny has a game, a little question that he came up with, hypothetical. He's going to run this through after we take a break here. But first up, I want to tell you about our friends at Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a family-owned business. And for gearheads, because I'm obviously, you can tell by hearing me and me talking about Rock Auto, that I'm an absolute gearhead. Love fixing my car in the driveway and, you know, whatever. They have everything you need, from engine control modules, brake parts for tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at rockauto.com. And again, please tell them that Locked On sent you by writing Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box. And again, thanks again to them for sponsoring the show. All right, Danny, run us through this question. Run me through this hypothetical here.
So the question that I saw posed today at my other job at ESPN Cleveland was, would you rather there be no NBA draft lottery where the Cavs, you know, they lose the coin flip to OKC and they pick fifth? Like, that is what it is. Or would you rather the lottery actually happen where anything bad could happen, where we know actually picking fifth is the least likely outcome? They could slide all the way to ninth. The seventh position is the most likely. Would you rather have that risk to where they could jump up in the top four, or they could stick at five instead?
I personally would I want the lottery. I would like to be in a position, and like maybe like if you change the structure of this, you would get it more NFL-like situation where like teams are willing to trade up, right?
Sure.
Maybe not, because the NBA is a little different in terms of how the teams are structured and like the kind of player you need to sort of get somewhere in the NFL. You can build. There's different ways to build.
I think the pick economy in the NBA is just so much different than the draft capital economy is in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, like, second round picks are like just thrown around like they're nothing. And then like second round picks in the NFL, like for comparison, are just like considered much more valuable. And that's like, you know, yes. There's a lot of reasons for that.
Yes, definitely.
I would go with the lottery just because, like, I want the chance to for two reasons, I would say. Number one, broadly, I would want the chance to get a higher pick if I'm in that situation. Like, I sort of like the idea that a team that maybe, like, is a little bit in a better shape for someone like Cade. Like, Cleveland, I think, full stop, is in better shape to take on a guy like Cade than, like, a Houston or some of these other really bad teams. Like, the Cavs are not good, but I think, like, they have some really interesting, more developed surrounding pieces, even though I like guys like KPJ and Christian Wood and just Sean Tatum and whatever. But, like, I think the Cavs have some stuff. And then secondly, I think I sort of do think that, like, it does prevent, like, just – I do just want to get to a place where, like, the NBA regular season does matter a little bit more. And I think the lottery can kind of contribute to that. It's part of the reason why I like the play-in tournament, because talking to the Cavs when they sort of got eliminated after they lost to that game on a Saturday in Chicago, like, in March or so, or maybe it was April, I don't know at this point. They were, like, bummed, right? Like, they were bummed that they lost. They clearly wanted to feel like they were competing for something, and I think the season changed on that night. And I think I want to live in a world where, like, A, the regular season matters, and we're not just rewarding, like, teams that are actively losing, because, like, that is not good for, like, the fans of the team first and foremost, but it's not good for anyone. And yes, players don't tank, teams and organizations do. But, like, it's just not good for any. I think, like, where if you're going to ultimately just reward losing no matter what, I think that's sort of a tough pill for me. And I just, again, I like the variability of, yes, like, you get a little, you know, to quote Bruce Arians, no risk it, no biscuit.
Yes, that is true. And I think it's interesting, especially this year, because, you know, the consensus says that this is a 5-player draft. And whether or not you agree with that, disagree with that, I think is probably a different conversation. But you have a chance to pick one of those 5 guys if you stick in at 5. Or you could have the chance to pick somebody that ultimately, you know, people aren't very high on if you slide down to 7, 8, or 9, with all due apologies to Scottie Barnes, Chris.
Look, I'm willing to be like, pilled by, like, someone else. Like, you could get me into Jalen Johnson. You could get me into Franz Wagner. You could get me into... You know, Moses Moody is another guy that I'm intrigued by. There's a lot of, like, wing type.
I know you like Moses Moody as well.
Anyone but Corey Kispert is sort of, like, my vibe if you're not picking in at the top here. Like, just don't do the win now shit and take Kispert.
No, well, I think even after 3, it's hard to do the win now stuff.
I don't even think it exists as a thing. That's also my other take, because I just don't think it exists in a way that people think it does.
I think the win now stuff does exist. Like, I think any team that drafts Cade, gets the number one pick,
but it's like the inverse of, like, with the NFL. It's like, if you're, like, a good NFL team, you could, like, maybe afford to take a linebacker at 26, or, like, whatever. But, like, in the NBA, it's like, I don't think there's, like, necessarily, like, win now moves when you're picking, like, 11th. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if there's ever, like, a guy that's, like, 11 that's going
to
fix that.
There typically aren't guys at that spot that are ready to contribute to winning. You are more drafting for developmental reasons when you get there. And I think that's probably even true, you know, with a higher pick than 11th. If you're 8th, 9th, unless you get lucky and end up with Donovan Mitchell or whatever, it's not likely that guy is going to really move the needle in terms of wins and losses the next season. That's just not how it works, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say that even about the top 5 most years. I think this year might be a little bit different, but that's just the common theme of the NFL draft or NBA draft. Both drafts, really.
So are there guys that you like? I mean, we've talked a little bit around this a little bit. I've mentioned some of the guys I like that are not sort of the top guys. And just for consensus, I think the top 4 guys would sort of be Cade, Mobley, Suggs, and Green. Kuminga seems like the obvious guy at 5 for a lot of people.
I think I'm definitely higher on Kuminga than you are.
Well, my skepticism for Kuminga is just, like, I don't know if the Cavs are he seems like he needs, like, some more time to cook. And develop.
He's not a win now. The discussion we just had, he's not a win now guy.
I don't know.
Like, Cavs draft him at 5th, I for one would be thrilled. I think that he's going to be a future all-star. I you could make the case, you know, he's among the most athletic guys in this draft. He's got the size you want. He's just not all the way ready to be an NBA player. And that's fine, because, you know, most guys that are 18 years old aren't there. And that's something that, you know, guys like Luka and Zion, they make us forget about the fact that these are kids still. Yeah. Like, they're still learning. They can't buy alcohol legally. Like, they're just not fully developed. But I think that Kuminga's a guy that's going to be an all-star. I'm high on him. I think it's a 5-player draft, and then there's a cutoff there. And I think Kuminga is firmly in that top five. I would think about drafting him fourth. I'm not as high on Jalen Suggs as other guys are. I think that's where my difference is.
So my take on just Kuminga, just very quickly, is just I just wonder if the Cavs are patient enough to like let him season a little bit. Like that's just like my concern.
I understand that. I certainly understand that, especially after having Isaac Okoro, where he's the, you know, he is a guy that requires patience as well. And do you want to be patient with back-to-back wing players at number five overall?
That said, Okoro Kuminga could be a bomb modern like wing combo. Like just
absolutely.
Like I
mean with their size, and I'm not sure of Kuminga's wingspan off the top of my head, but you know his size and athleticism, he profiles as a guy that should be a good defender.
Yeah.
He's not going to be there yet, but he should be a good defender if he figures it out and is taught correctly. And at that point, you're looking at having one elite level wing defender in Okoro and another very good one. That makes your life so much easier.
Kuminga's wingspan, I guess, for Wiggles, 6'11" or 7 foot even. So like, that's pretty good. So do you have any other guys? Do you have any other guys that we haven't just named that if they're picking like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 that you're intrigued by? Is there anyone we haven't touched on that you want to just name real quick?
I like Jalen Johnson. Yep. I think I'm a little bit higher on him than some people seem to be after, you know, his year at Duke didn't go as expected. Keon Johnson, I like a little bit as well. Guard from Tennessee. I think he could be good. He's got athleticism. As long as if the shooting can come a little bit, if that can improve, he wasn't a great shooter from the floor at Tennessee as a freshman, and his free throw rate his free throw percentage leaves a little bit to be desired. But if he can improve that shot, I think he can be really well. I think Franz Wagner is going to be better than his brother, which is the best thing I can say about him. I like Scotty Barnes. I like Moses Moody. I'm not as high on those guys as you are. Zaire Williams is another guy that I think is going to be a better pro than he was college player, which is certainly something that you look for. But those are the guys that I would that come off the just off the top of my head.
Zaire being sort of like lower on boards, it seems like in the ESPN board, I think has him like in the mid-teens, is sort of interesting to me. Josh Giddey's another guy that I'm just intrigued by because Danny, I have a type, to be honest. Like I have like a type, and Giddey sort of like fits my type, even if like. I just am all in on playmaking, and like I could see him like jumping in some interesting ways.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, one of the things I look for, and it's one of the reasons it's one of the reasons why I like Darius Garland a lot, is he makes other guys better, and that's something I look for, is are other guys better when you are on the floor? Because I think it matters.
Yeah.
I truly do think that that's something that matters.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, we're going to talk about the aforementioned Darius Garland after the break, but got a couple more bills to pay. And first up, we got our friends at Bet Online. Bet Online is the official betting partner of the Locked On Podcast Network, and they have you covered on everything. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at Bet Online. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for your sporting needs, including MLB, the NBA playoffs, NHL, and all the UFC or MMA action out there. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's with promo code LOCKEDON, and it's BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And I want to tell you about our friends at Built Bar. So Built Bar, as I'm sure every Locked On Cavs listener knows by now, is the best tasting protein bar ever. Danny, you were not just a high school football player like me, who's just a schmuck, but you also play college football. How many bad protein bars have you eaten in your life?
Oh, hundreds.
Yeah.
100 bad protein shakes, too.
Oh, my God.
But that's a different story.
No, they're all bad until Built Bar. Built Bar has...
Some of them just taste like chalk.
Literally just... chalk wrapped in plastic.
Yes.
Built Bar is not that. They have 9 great flavors: coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mince brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel. They also have some limited time flavors every week. This week it was birthday cake. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of net carbs. Some have 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. 9 amazing flavors, all tasty and all healthy. Order today. Get that raspberry, that mint brownie, that peanut butter brownie, or whatever else you're into. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Again, use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, Danny. So I'm all in on Darius Garland. This is not a new take for me, but I am so in on him that we have a poll we're doing it for the sword that we're ranking the players right now in terms of how good they were this year, basically. And I can understand putting Sexton at one if you feel like his track record's a little better, but I kind of think I'm all in on Garland at this point.
I think Sexton's the better player right now, but I think Darius Garland has the brighter future. I think that if you have to pick, and this is the most divisive Cavs topic around, you know, it's the easiest, it's kind of a lazy topic. It's, you know, Garland or Sexton, 216-578, whatever radio number you want to put at the end of that. It's the easy thing to talk about. But I think Garland has a brighter future, and in part because of the thing we just talked about, and that's he makes guys better when he's on the floor. The Cavs offense looked so much smoother when he was the one running it this year. And I just think he's going to continue to get better. As far as I'm concerned, this was his rookie year. If you look at what happened with him at Vanderbilt, he played 5 games as a freshman and then made the jump to the NBA. It's hard to expect a guy that's battling a knee injury, that is why his season at Vanderbilt was cut short, then to jump in the NBA and be really good right away at a position that's incredibly difficult to learn. It's a really hard thing to run an NBA offense at 19 years old. And then to have that season cut short because a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic strikes. And then to finally come back after, 9 months off between the time the Cavaliers played their last game in the 2019-2020 season before they played their first game this past season, I think that his career has been a lot of adversity that hasn't necessarily been his own doing. And I'm really excited to see how he comes out on the other side, because I think next year we're going to see an even better version of the guy that we saw this year. And I think that everyone should be happy with the version of the guy they saw this year.
The passing is outrageous. It just is. Like, I think Colin Sexton improved as a passer in a lot of ways this season.
I would agree, yes.
The passes Sexton, there's a qualitative difference in the passes they make. Sexton makes more dump-off passes. He's not, like, passing guys open. He's not, like, reading the pressure coming at him from a trap or a double team or, like, whatever the defense kind of looks throwing at him and then finding the open lane or, like, passing a guy open or, like, whizzing a pass into somewhere creatively to, like, get it through to my guy. Sexton will, like, run the pick and roll. Like, watch them both run pick and roll with Jared Allen on the NBA stats page. Like, Sexton will run the pick and roll. They will get to a spot, and he's literally making a basic dump-off pass, and then Allen throw it, like, doesn't really get a ton of lobs from Sexton. Darius Garland runs the pick and roll. You get him downhill. He's throwing up lobs, and he's manipulating the defender at a level that is just beyond what Sexton does. There are not a lot of guys. Like, I understand that, like, Sexton, like, has a bigger, like, does more traditional scoring stuff. I understand that there are things he does that are better, but it's just, like, the creativity and the playmaking is just so important for, especially when you, like, need to supplement, like, if you want to get to a place where you're good, you need guys like Darius in ways more than maybe you need guys like Sexton. Like, you need them both, and I think you can do something interesting with both of them, depending on the pricing. Ultimately, it will sort of, I think, dictate this more than anything else, which we probably haven't talked about enough in terms of that discourse, but I'm just all in on Garland, man. I think he's going to be, like, really, really good. I think, like, he got 3 most improved player votes, which is sort of why we're talking about him. But, like, I it would not shock me if, like, in year 3, in year 4, maybe year 5, if the Cavs make a leap and he has, like, a really, really good year, like a D-low, like, has that kind of, like, D-low but, like, less fraudulent leap.
That's a good way to put it. And I think one of the reasons why, you know, I'm so excited about him is, one of the more difficult things to learn how to do in the NBA, and it's something that Colin hasn't learned how to do that well yet, is you bring up, you know, manipulating the defenses. And part of the reason Garland is so good at that is he knows how to play slow. Sexton is a guy that it feels like he's always moving 1,000 miles an hour. And maybe Garland doesn't have that same top gear that Colin does have, but Garland can play in first and second and third gear. And then he can get up to fourth and fifth too. But being able to play slow makes it so much more difficult for the defense to react to what you're going to do, because you have more options. If they don't know the speed you're going to be playing at all the time, it's going to open more things up. things are going to develop at different rates on the court, whether it's in, you know, pick and roll or other actions. And him knowing how to do that already, just, you know, really 1 year into his career, I think is an incredibly bright thing for his future.
The other thing that I think is really intriguing with him, and I want to see where he can take it, is I think those deep three-pointers that he took a tad bit as a rookie, those quick pull-ups, and then like started pushing them back more with the cat this year in year two, with a real offseason, with hopefully no injuries for him, because I think he did get a, had a little nick over the course of the pandemic and then had to like kind of rehab that a little bit, as by all accounts. I want to see if he can, like, I don't think he's ever going to get to, like, the Dame or Steph, like, just wrecking defense that way, but I think if he can get to a place where he can take them and he's, like, 3-4 feet back, that's just such a tool. And, like, that is another way to stretch defenses, to open things up for your centers, to sort of make things easier for Sexton. I think, like, Sexton cutting off of that action could be really intriguing. I think, like, it should make life easier for Okoro. Like, that is just another wrinkle to his game that I want to see where he can take it. Like, I miss sort of the... I don't like watching basketball when it's like all sort of the same, so to speak. And that this is a way that sort of like can homogenize it if more and more guys are just doing this. But in terms of like its effectiveness, like I do sort of just think that Darius maybe warping defenses in that way. If it may become a thing teams respect over time, that's just like another little wrinkle to watch for me.
Well, the further away from the basket that the opposing defense has to guard you, the easier it's going to be for everybody else. It's going to be a hassle for you, of course, but it's going to make life easier for your teammates. And that's part of the difference between he and Colin is, you know, things aren't made easier for his teammates because of that. And that's partly because he's still trying to, you know, find faith in his outside shot and just taking it more often. But the more defenses are going to have to stretch, the more lanes are going to be open for other guys, maybe his three-point attempts or his percentage isn't going to be good or as good as we would like as he continues to step further and further back. But as long as they're contesting it, it's going to open up everything else. And I think that we'll see, you know, his rate of attacking the rim go up a little bit. I would love to see his free throw rate get higher because that was one of the things I was not thrilled with this year for, you know, the frequency of which he got to the rim. The rate at which he got to the line based on that was, you know, near the bottom of the league for guys that had frequencies as high as him in terms of drive. So I'd love to see that go up as well. And it could be something that comes along with taking more threes from further and further out and stretching defenses that way.
Yeah. From our friends at Cleaning the Glass. So this year, according to them, 5.4% of his field goal attempts he's fouled on, which is in the 25th percentile, so bottom 25% of point guards. Interestingly, he's at the 52nd percentile in terms of and one rate, which is like at least like that. I think that's sort of intriguing. 84% from the line, which you would like to maybe get bumped up a little bit closer to 90. Shot 86% as a rookie. So there's something there. I think that's right. And I think defensively, like, made some strides. Wasn't just not trying anymore. I don't think he's ever going to be like a plus-plus defender, but for guys like, I think
he's too small to be a plus-plus defender, I think. I think that, you know, he's going to have physical limitations as far as that goes.
But if he can be smart at the point of attack, not get...
Just don't be a minus defender.
Right, right. Like, and be smart, get steals when you can, help kickstart fast breaks when you can. Like, Sexton has more upside as, like, a kind of an off-ball, like, I think, like, kind of, not free safety, but, like, kind of creating steals, creating some havoc. Garland, if he's the point of attack guy, I think, like, you know, if he can get a little stronger... Gets, you know, maybe bump his steal rate up just a little bit and just kind of be smart in those spots. I think that's all I can really ask for. But Danny, we're going to have you back tomorrow to talk about Isaac Okoro. We're going to dive into his rookie season and look at that a little bit. But thanks again for coming on, man. It's good to have you back on.
Of course.
And before we go, I want to remind you to check out the Locked On Today podcast. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on all the latest news in every major sport. With the help of our local experts, follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.